In a world where hypnosis podcasts come and go, one man is here to deliver a knockout, no-holds-barred approach and deliver electrifying interviews with the world's top experts so you can discover the secrets to their success. Introducing the Hawaii Hypnosis Podcast. Subscribe to the newsletter and get instant access to 4 free skill-building audios that utilize a revolutionary hypnotic approach to improve your skills from the inside out. It's practically bulletproof. As a member of Hawaii Hypnosis, you'll join the ranks of the movers and shakers in the hypnosis and NLP community and discover how to significantly improve your skills from the inside out.
Aloha, everyone. This is Antonio Perez with HawaiiHypnosis.org. Now, today I have somebody I've been trying to get on the podcast for quite some time. My guest for today is Laura Spicer from the UK. Laura, thank you for taking the time to join me today.
That's great. Hi, Antonio. Hi. Aloha, Hawaii Hypnosis people.
Oh, we're kind of a few and far in between, but we do know of each other.
Cool.
Now, before we go too far into this interview, can you let my audience know what your website is? Or what your websites are?
Sure. Well, let's start with my personal website, which is laura-spicer.com. And my clinic website is justbewell.com. Justbewell.com.
Okay, the Just Be Well sounds really familiar. Do you have Nick Kemp on the website by any chance?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, that's how I do remember it.
It's actually, it's an amazing group of top NLP people who are all over the world and seeing clients. And that's the hub website for all the information about what we all do.
Okay, so I have seen this website quite a few times. Now, I'm curious, how did you get into hypnosis and NLP?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad you're curious. That's an excellent state to carry with you. And now I'll answer the other bit of it, which is by accident, actually. I had a difficult son. He was about 5 years old at the time. And my job was voice training. And I was going into organizations and companies and working with CEOs and finance directors on their voices. But meantime, I was dealing with a son who wasn't the easiest one to deal with, and I just couldn't find the way to get him happy. And I read an article in a magazine called Kindred Spirit, which is a kind of new agey magazine. It was feeding the spiritual side of me. And there was this article, and the article had something which didn't seem congruent to me. So they were the wisest words that I'd ever read. I mean, this guy was saying such cool stuff, and it immediately really got me, I was prickling with excitement reading this stuff. And then I looked at the picture, and it was an old rock and roller with one set of fingernails on one hand painted black, and a ponytail and a leather jacket looking like he'd just got off a Harley Davidson. And I looked at the picture and I read the words and I looked at the picture and I read the words and it just didn't fit for me. It just didn't fit. And I thought, wow, maybe this is the maverick that I need to help me with my son. And I figured that I probably couldn't afford a one-to-one session, so in those days, the trainings with Richard Bandler were very inexpensive. I think it was about £500 for the practitioner training. And I said to my husband, I'm going to do it. And actually, at the time, I thought, what I'll do, it doesn't matter what I think of the training. Let me see if I can sneak up to him in a lunch break and ask his advice. And I've got to tell you that for the first 3 days with Richard, in those days, he was he wasn't as gentle as he is now, and there are plenty of people that wouldn't call him gentle now. But he was really fiery, and I didn't like him. I didn't think he was a nice guy. And in those days, I didn't know that that wasn't what it was about. And I didn't get it at all. And I just thought, this is rubbish. I hate this training. I hate this man. But I felt I had to stick it out because I'd spent £500 of family funds. And I've always been quite tenacious. So I stuck at it and I said to my husband, if it hasn't got any better by Friday, I'm not going in for the last 2 days. And suddenly on the Wednesday, which was halfway through the course, I was traveling home on the Underground here in London. And for the first time, I really heard my own internal dialogue. And I was saying to myself, I've changed my mind. And I could hear the ambiguity. I could hear all the meanings in it. And I burst out laughing out loud on the tube. The next morning, on the Underground, sorry, American people, Hawaiian people, we call it the Tube here, right? But it is our Underground train network. Anyway, the next morning I woke up laughing. Richard had installed a gospel choir in my head and it was singing me, you know, wake up to a brand new day in my head as I woke up. And I jumped out of bed smiling and laughing, and I've never looked back. So that's the story of how I got into NLP and hypnosis.
Yeah, I could see how having Richard's voice, Bandler's voice, in the back of your mind when you're waking up could definitely... It's definitely going to do some... I don't know if... You're definitely going to find some kind of effect out of it.
Well, I tell you, it wasn't Richard's voice. It was an entire gospel choir of about 50 people, and they were all waking me up with joy and bliss. It was wonderful. And, I knew I'd changed my mind, and I knew that there was more than one meaning to that. I had changed my mind about the course, about Richard, about NLP, this thing, NLP, but also my mind had been changed in a very profound way. And I'm not the same person since then that I was before then. It was the most extraordinarily transforming experience to work with Richard Bandler. And I continue to work with him. In fact, I just got a really lovely email from him this morning because I like to think of him as a friend now. And I told him about something that I'd been doing yesterday. And he wrote me an email and it just says, I'm proud of you. And, you know, for me, that's really precious because he's my hero and my mentor. And he changed my life immeasurably. And as a result of directly as a result of what he and Paul McKenna and Michael Breen and nowadays John Laval have given to me, I have changed thousands of people's lives, too. And it's just an extraordinary wave of amazingness. I have to be really careful because I can go so over the top when I talk about it because it is such a massive thing for me. I am who I am partly as a result of them. I mean, listen, the ground has to be fertile to plant the seeds in it. And I like to give myself some credit. I'm very fertile ground and I'm intelligent. And, you know, once I started getting the message, I think I got it pretty well, or I continue to get it pretty well. But I really have a lifetime to thank them for, those three guys, and in particular, Richard.
Ah, yeah, you kind of sound like you love hypnosis and NLP. I'm just getting a small hint of that.
Well, yes, of course I do. But actually, what I feel is I love being able to think and feel the way I do. I love the fact that I'm not a victim of my own bullshit anymore. And I love the fact that I feel free. And I don't always feel free. I'm very human. And I'm quite capable of having an off day, But basically, I know how to pull myself up by the bootlaces and get back into a blissful, happy, productive, effective state from which I make good decisions and good choices and make my life and the lives of the people around me a better place to be. And God, what could be better than that? I mean, I think it's actually quite sacred. I'm a very spiritual person as well. And I feel that being in a position to really suck the juices of this life and value and honor my time here on this planet in the best possible way I can, it just doesn't get any better than that for me. So yes, I really love NLP and I love hypnosis and I do it on myself all the time. Every day, there's not a day that goes past where I'm not adjusting how I talk to myself. There's not a day when I'm not using the tools that I've been given absolutely on myself. And I do think that for anybody who's done any training in NLP and hypnosis, that's the place to start. If you can't make your own life a much happier, more productive and effective place, then I don't think you should be out there working with other people. I think this is one of the things that, dare I say it, I know it's controversial, not so much in our community, but, you know, I think this is one of the things I've noticed about therapy, standard therapy. There are plenty of therapists whose lives are rubbish, who are not coping, who are, you know, having real personal difficulties. But they don't mind sitting there and directing somebody else. And although I can see that sometimes it's don't do what I do what I say, and that can have some validity, in general, I think if you don't know how to make yourself happy and sorted, I'm not sure how healthy it is to be getting involved in somebody else's processes. But that is not true as an NLP-er. I think it's the first place you start. It's on yourself.
That's the thing. It's all about, with these fields, hypnosis and NLP, it's all about practice. And you need the subjective experience of it as well and realize like how slight adjustments can make really big changes.
I think it really helps to have the subjective experience. Of course, we're not going to be having every subjective every experience there is to have, and we're going to get clients who are having a different experience because we're all different, unique people. So it doesn't take away the need for sensory acuity and for paying attention very sharply to what's going on for other people and not assuming that it's the same as what's going on for us. But, you know, to have a rich, productive life ourselves, at least we can be running good strategies, even if the content is different. And, you know, it's the learning model. If you've trained in NLP, you know the learning model. You start off unconsciously incompetent, and then you have awareness, which gets you to some conscious incompetence. You realize you can't do something. And then the step between that conscious incompetence and that conscious competence is to learn a new skill or a new strategy. But once you've got that, to get good at it, the step is practice, 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 practice.
Join the ranks of the movers and shakers in the hypnosis and NLP community. Subscribe to the newsletter and discover why this podcast is taking the world by storm.
For my audience, and the people that don't know what sensory acuity is, can you describe what it is and how you can develop that skill?
Yeah. Wake up. You know, okay, so I don't really know who I'm talking to here because we haven't had this conversation. Am I right that there are people out there who've never trained in NLP?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me adjust how I'm speaking a little bit. Sensory acuity is something that we value extremely highly as NLPers. And what it means is that we're awake. And that we're really using our senses. We're paying attention to what we see, what we hear, what's going on, really. The more you notice that's relevant, the more you're going to be able to put a big, well, I want to say a big picture, but it might not be a big picture. It might just be an understanding of a situation. And one of the things that struck me, that strikes me often, is how half asleep most people are. And I don't feel like I'm doing anything special, but I so often notice that I am noticing things that other people are not. And I can't imagine what that's like anymore. But for example, that story I told you at the beginning where I suddenly noticed my own internal dialogue, that was a revelation at the time. But now I couldn't not hear what I'm saying to myself. And, you know, most of my clients are coming in because they're saying horrible things to themselves, pointing themselves in the wrong direction, and running horror movies in their heads. So no wonder they're feeling horrible. And the difference that you make when you change your pictures that you're running in your head and what you're saying to yourself and what you're hearing inside your head, and then even the sensations and feelings in your body so that they spark different neurological pathways and set off different interpretations and give you new ideas it's everything. It's everything. You know, it just gives you real control over the way you are. And of course, you know, the way you think affects the way you feel. And the way you feel affects your chemistry. And that is really amazing when you think about it. You mean you can actually change the chemical bath that you're bathing your cells in so that it's healthier and happier, and so that it generates more productive, creative, blissful thoughts in your head so that you just feel wonderful. I often think about something I heard Steven Spielberg, the film director, say. He said, and I love this so much, and I love him for it. He said, sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I'm too excited about the day ahead to eat my breakfast. Now, you know what? There are people who get themselves out of bed by imagining what's going to happen. Excuse me. Imagining what's going to happen when they're late for work and their boss sacks them and then they don't have a job and their family are hungry and their wife is divorcing them. And that's what starts their day off. And when you compare that with what Steven Spielberg is doing, well, I don't know about you, but I know which camp I'm aiming for. You know, I want to wake up in the morning excited about the day ahead. And I want to feel that all day long. I want life to feed me and make me feel wonderful. And in order for that to happen and to be the best that I can possibly be, that took some adjustment of what I was saying to myself and what I was imagining. So the difference is profound. It's absolutely massive. It's massive. And I'm a horrible NLP evangelist because it did so much for me. And I continue to do, well, I and my colleagues continue to do the same for other people. It's a skill that you can pass on to other people. And I remember very clearly that when I first did my practitioner training, long before I thought I'd do this with other people, that what the feedback I was getting from my friends, from my family, from the people I met socially was, I don't know why, but when I've been with you, I just feel so good. And, you know, how rewarding is that? You know, that really lights me up. Just to think that I can have a coffee with a friend and they'll go away feeling good when they arrive feeling not so good. That's awesome. I don't know. Do you think that?
Oh, that's a very rewarding feeling to have to know that you're having somebody leaving your presence feeling even better, if not as good as when they before they interacted with you, leaving feeling even better. It's very, very rewarding.
Yeah, and it may, you know, It's a very easy place to start valuing yourself from. And a lot of people feel that they're not really making much of a contribution, or they can't work out where they come in the big world out there. But when you feel that you make a difference to people's lives profoundly and for the better, it makes life feel valuable. I feel valuable. And I can't think of a better feeling. Well, maybe in love. That's a really good feeling. But valuable feels really good.
Yeah, there are plenty of feelings out there. You get, and as long as you have a good balance, that's the key. The right ingredients and the perfect balance.
Yeah, although I must say I like extremes. So, you know, if I'm going to feel down, I'm really going to feel down. But not for long, by the way. I've had some pretty horrendous things happen in my life in the last years, and had to deal with a lot of crises and difficulties. And some of them, it wouldn't have been appropriate to have felt wonderful. For example, when my husband died, it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to feel blissful and happy about that. And I didn't. But I was able to limit the time that I was grieving, and to the appropriate times. So not when I was with other people, not when I was working. And, you know, I'd take time out and think about my husband and feel the grief and the sadness. I think it would have been inappropriate for me to have done anything else. But what was wonderful about it was that it wasn't out of control. And, you know, when I needed to stop grieving and get out there and do some work or be with friends, I was able to shift the state that I was in so congruently and so fully that I could genuinely have a good time or be with other people or do my work fully. So it's not about always being happy, 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 clappy, but it is about being in a state of what I would call something like richness. My life feels rich. And, you know, the colors are bright and the sounds are crisp and clear and loud and the pictures are big and the world is shiny and I'm shining and I love it.
Yeah. And also to comment on that about, you're right, you don't want everything. You don't always want to be happy because it's just not the way to live. And feelings and emotions aren't, they're not constant. You can get like different levels of happy or different levels of sad, but it's good being able to choose what emotion you're going to feel and how much of it, etc.
Yeah. And I'm a person that loves intensity, which is how, you know, that's the measure of emotion, how intense it is. And I love intensity, and the fact that I can have intense pleasure and intense sadness and intense enjoyment and intense, I love that. And not always. Sometimes I like mellow and I'm very, very good at relaxing. But, you know, that's another thing. You know, most people don't relax enough. And when I relax, I really relax. And I relax every day for a while. I think it's a good thing to do. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to really relax in so you don't have the so you're not getting the ulcers and all of the stress damages on the body.
Well, we know for sure that happier people, people who are less stressed, tend to live longer, happier, healthier lives. That's just the way of it. A sad, miserable people, even if they live long lives, and I've met quite a few old, sad, miserable people, so it's not necessarily an indicator of longevity, but they tend to suffer more ill health and problems.
Yeah, why would you want to live a life of always feeling mad, angry, miserable, etc.? It doesn't really seem like a really fun, rich experience.
No, but most people don't know how to do something else. And that's what NLP gives you. It's like the manual for your brain, really. So once you've got the manual, you can make some positive choices for yourself.
You're listening to the Hawaii Hypnosis Podcast. Can I ask you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by going to hawaiihypnosis.org/iTunes and give us a 5-star rating.
Now, I know one thing that you specialize in is voice and voice work.
I do.
Well, can you comment on some things that my listeners can do to help improve their vocal range?
Well, first of all, you have to ask yourself whether your listeners will want to, because, you know, as an NLP-er, I am absolutely certain that when you're communicating, it's really important what you're doing with your voice. But that is an unconscious incompetence in many people. Many people really don't even stop to think about it mattering, and they're not listening to themselves, and they're not adjusting what they're doing with their voice to have the desired effect. And so when I, in the early days, before I became slightly better known and people would come and find me, I often had to explain to people that it was important at all. It's really obvious once you've done an NLP training that when you're communicating, all the output systems matter. Your facial expressions matter. The look in your eyes matter. And your voice tone matters. And, you know, particularly if you are working as a hypnotist and there's somebody sitting across with their eyes closed, or now, for example, when we're talking on an audio interview where people can't see me, it's all I've got to communicate with. And it's going to, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, what are the different tones and tunes and volumes and pace and pause? What is it that I'm conveying with all of that? You know, there's a statistic, and take the statistic with a pinch of salt, but there's a statistic that says in a communication, a face-to-face communication, the words only account for 7% of the message, and that what people see accounts for 55%, and what they hear in terms of the tones and tunes accounts for 38%. And that may or may not be true, and I think you need to just have some flexibility on that. But I'm talking to you now, and you're listening to me, and some of the message that I'm giving you is coming through the words themselves. But let's face it, I can say yes in 50 different ways and give it 50 different meanings. Yes doesn't mean the same as yes or yes. That's three different messages that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think is quite obvious to you. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Definitely different messages.
Okay. And that's the same word. So that means that the tones and tunes and the way you say the words that you say is the message. It's conveying how you feel about what you're saying. And it's conveying your state. A state is another NLP word, and it means the sum total of everything that's going on for you in that moment. Your physical state, your mental state, your mood, and the shape of your body and your physiology and the way you're using your physiology. And all of that can be heard in a voice. I can hear when somebody has a good posture without being able to see them. You know, I can hear how much breath somebody is using. I can hear how somebody is feeling. And so can everybody else. The only thing, the difference between me and everybody else on this one is that I'm conscious of it. And most people process that information pretty unconsciously. When people are processing the tones and tunes unconsciously, that means it's very powerful. Okay, that means you can adjust somebody's response without them even noticing. And that, to me, is really cool. So that means that, you know, I can change somebody from miserable to happy without them even noticing how I did it. I mean, that's fun for me and it's good for them. By the way, one of the things that I feel very strongly about in NLP in general is that it's a very good idea to have some sense of morality. It's a very powerful tool. And the fact that it's very powerful doesn't mean it's necessarily something that you have to use for everybody's benefit. You can equally use it to other people's detriment. And so I think that, you know, there ought to be a small print on your NLP training. And actually, I think Richard does actually, at the end of Richard Bandler's courses, when we get our certificates, he always makes us swear an oath that we're going to use this for the good of all. And, but yeah, so, you know, yes, it's an unconscious process when you process people's voice tone. And I'll tell you why. It's the your hearing is the first of your senses that is developed in the womb. So while you're still a fetus, you can hear. And by the time you're born, your mother, you know your mother's voice, you know the voices that have been around during the pregnancy. So you're already able to distinguish voices. And then in the first year of life, you don't really understand what the words mean, which is why people use naturally and automatically use very expressive voices with young babies. People use more pitch range with young babies. You know, they talk to them like this and really use pitch range for one thing. Because it's essential that you convey feelings to people who haven't yet learned what the words mean. So by the time you learned the meaning of the words and learned to speak at the age of around one, somewhere around there, plus or minus, you already are processing the tones and tunes. And then you overlay that with the meaning of the words. And in many cases, in most people's cases, the processing of the tones and tunes goes unconscious. That starts off unconscious as well. It's an unconscious process. So it makes it very, very powerful. And when you deliver a message of whatever kind, whether you're selling your product or telling somebody that you love them or trying to get your child to do what you want him to do, like tidy his room, it doesn't really matter what the communication is. When you're communicating that message, you know when you've got it right, when the other person responds the way you want them to respond. It's as simple as that. So the first thing is to ask yourself, are you getting the responses you want? And then, are you getting them as fully as you want them? So if the answer to that is, well, it could be better, then for sure you can do something useful by working on your voice. So that's the bit where I hope your listeners will go from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence. And even for those of you who are already very conscious of the effect that your voice tone has, you can listen, it's continuous improvement. There's always more you can do, but the first step is to be aware of it. And the first step is to listen to your own voice. Now, a lot of people that come to me and tell me that they hate their own voice. They've heard it on an answer phone, a voicemail, or, you know, somebody's videoed them, and they hate the way they sound. What that's about is not necessarily because they sound horrible, but because you can't hear yourself on the inside the way it sounds to somebody else, because the sound waves are resonating inside your skull in a particular way, and you don't hear it the same as it sounds to somebody else. Most people just sort of feel uncomfortable because it doesn't sound like what they thought they sounded like. It doesn't necessarily mean it sounds horrible. So there's a distinction to be made there between whether it's really unpleasant. And anyway, there's a place for unpleasant. You don't always want to sound great. Sometimes you might want to sound horrible so that people go away. My clients sometimes want to stay too long. And at that point, my voice will change and it won't be so lovely at all. And they might feel that they want to get out of my clinic. That's a good moment to use a voice that isn't so soothing or so helpful. Your voice conveys your state. So the question is, are you conveying your state as fully as you'd like to? And if you want to make improvements, the first place to start is to pay attention, first of all, to what you can hear for yourself and to the feedback that you're getting from the people you're working with, the people you're talking to. You know, when you speak to your wife and tell her you love her, does she tingle? Because your voice should be able to make tingles down her backbone when you tell her that. You know, so there's always more you can do, to put it fairly graphically, really.
To put it bluntly.
Yeah, why not?
It's funny about how just talking about the voice can make it a little bit raspy, or and when you kind of did that little voice shift when talking about clients, having to get clients out, I did kind of get that feeling. It's just, it felt really grating.
Well, you know, the thing is that your state is contagious and people respond to your state. So, I mean, you must know people who come in the room and it's like the sunshine walked in with them. And, you know, as soon as they come in, you kind of feel lit up inside and you're having more fun or feeling more relaxed or whatever it is. And those are the guys you want to hang out with and have for dinner. And then there are other people who walk in the room and it's like they've hoovered up all the good feelings in the room. That's Michael Breen was the one who taught me that. And it's true. And your voice is a big part of that. And so if you're very monotone or, you know, low energy, that's the state that's coming across to other people. And it's going to make them feel damped down. And, you know, there are some people who are polarity responders. So if you're a little bit boring or a little bit miserable, they're going to respond by putting in more energy and being less miserable. But most people are going to just respond to the state that you're presenting and kind of go there to some extent with you. So, yeah, if I'm making my voice raspy and I sound bored and not very nice, that's a feeling. That's a feeling you're going to get. It's a really good tool, by the way. Ladies, if you have any friends who are the kind of people that like to talk for hours on the phone, and if you're like me and you don't want to speak for that long, sometimes you need to change your voice towards the end of your call, favorite call length time, so that they get the message it's time to go. It's a very useful tool on the phone, your voice.
Oh, it's either that or you be real blunt and you cuss them out. It's probably better the former.
Well, I have at least one friend, and because I know she won't be listening to this, I'm safe in saying it, who doesn't take any notice. I say, I've got to go now. And she says, just one more thing. And then starts off on a whole new trajectory of conversation. It's really hard to get her off the phone until I worked out the voice to do it with. And now I can do it just like that. It's really cool.
As soon as she hears it, she knows it's time to go.
She does. And it's well anchored in place. So when she hears that voice, it's time to get off the phone.
You're listening to the Hawaii Hypnosis Podcast. Can I ask you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by going to hawaiihypnosis.org/iTunes and give us a 5-star rating?
For people in my audience, the people listening to this that want to improve their voice, I know you have some products. What are some of your products that you have that'll help people develop their voice, their vocal range?
Okay. Well, let's start with my DVDs. First of all, I have a DVD for people who aren't NLP practitioners, but who are teachers. So there's a DVD called Voice Power for Teachers. And that is a DVD that takes you through an exercise routine and a way of thinking which will improve what you can do in the classroom. And it's for teachers at all levels. So if you're a teacher and you want to work on your voice, I have the perfect product for you. The other two DVDs are geared towards people who are trained in NLP and who are working with people. And they're both recordings of live seminars that I gave. One of them is an edited version of a day I gave, which is the overview of how you can work with your voice to improve it, to improve the vocal range, and to improve the voice control. And the other one is, and that one is called Voice Power for NLP Practitioners. The other DVD is called Voice Power, I think it's called Voice Power The Course. And it is actually a four DVD set of an entire voice training course. So, and actually that one also was given for people who weren't NLPers. So that would work for somebody that hasn't had any training in NLP, but who really wants a longer, proper, fuller training. So those are the three DVDs. Then I have a CD, which isn't really voice training. It's for interview and exam nerves. So if somebody is anxious about going for interviews or sitting exams, that is a hypnotic CD that will take them into a much more resourceful state so they can do their interview or exam at their best. And then I've got various downloadable MP3s of different interviews and different, there's a podcast series that I did with one guy who wanted to learn how to do public speaking. And he was a long way from sounding good. And I've got to say that after the six sessions with me, he still has some work to do. But you can definitely hear the improvement. And the advice that I gave him and the exercises that I gave him would be very applicable to anybody wanting to work on their voice. There's also a few other interviews and products that you can buy online and download where I'm talking to somebody like you and they're asking me questions and I'm giving them exercises and things. In fact, there's one I recorded with a guy called Igor Ledachovsky, who runs a very, very wonderful training. It's called Street Hypnosis, I think. And it's a club that people join and he trains them in hypnosis. And he did a long, I think, I've got a feeling it's about 3 hours altogether, where it's absolutely directly I am telling people what they can do in order to improve their ability with their voice. So there's various products and go to my website and look. And the other thing, if I may say so, Antonio, is that if anybody wants to email me for what would be best, you know, to ask me what would be the best product for them, I'm really happy to advise. Best email to get me on is laura.spicer@gmail.com. That's Laura, L-A-U-R-A, dot Spicer, S for Sierra, P for something, Papa, I-C-E-R, @gmail.com. And it's just fine to email me.
You know, they you just mentioned about the one with Igor Ledachovsky. Was that one, I think I've seen it before, was that one of the master classes?
It was.
Cool, yeah, that's one master class I haven't had a chance to check out.
Okay, well, you can buy it on my website. I think, you know, I'm really bad at my website, and actually I do have another website in the making, which at the moment is called reframinglauraspicer.com, And that is going to be my website when I get round to working on it a bit more and having the shop functioning, etc. For the time being, the shop is working on laura-spicer.com. And but it may not be that all the products are even there. So if I've mentioned a product on this call that you can't find on my website, email me and I can send it to you.
Join the ranks of the movers and shakers in the hypnosis and NLP community. Subscribe to the newsletter and discover why this podcast is taking the world by storm.
Is there anything else that you can think of that you want to mention?
Well, I guess the main thing that I hope has come out of this call is that if you're not NLP trained, it's something really worth looking into. And I would say about NLP trainings, not every NLP training is a good training. It's because Richard Bandler is such a maverick, he likes the fact that it is not overseen and governed in the way that most fields are. You know, if you want to go and see a therapist, I think it's true in your country as well as mine, there's probably a governing body that lets you know whether this is a accredited therapist and a good therapist. And by the way, actually, I agree with Richard, because there are plenty of therapists out there who aren't very good and who are accredited. So it's not the be-all and end-all. But in NLP, we don't have sort of checks or the same checks. Not every NLP training would be the perfect training to go on. You need personal recommendations, and you need to speak to people who've been on the course and who are telling you that their life has been changed profoundly for the better, and that they are capable of doing things that they beyond their previous expectations of themselves. If you hear that, it's probably a good training. And of course, anything that you do with Richard Bandler is going to be beautiful. That's just that is a given. He is one of the co-creators of NLP, and he is indescribably amazing. So always worth booking with Richard. That is always going to be worthwhile. I've been training with Richard for the best part of 20 years. I'm on his assisting team, usually twice or more times a year. So that means, you know, every year I'm giving between, you know, something like a month of my time free of charge just to be in the room with the man. And after 20 years of going, I mean, I must have done 50 or more practitioner courses, and I have never come away from a practitioner course not having learnt something more. It's endlessly generative. So you can always go and train with Richard. Otherwise, get personal recommendations. And so I really want your listeners to know that that might be something they want to explore. And the other thing is, pay attention to the way your voice sounds and notice the responses you're getting. The more you notice, the more you can adjust your communication to do the job it's there to do. Because after all, as Richard Bandler says, the meaning of the communication is in the feedback you get. If you tell somebody that you love them and they go inside their own head and think, she really doesn't, she hates me, then you need to find a different way to say it. It's as simple as that. So that's what I hope at the very least has come out of the call. And I hope people have enjoyed listening. That would be also good.
I know I've had a blast listening and talking to you today.
Okay, thank you, Antonio. It's great to talk to you, too.
You know, I just want to say thanks once again, and I look forward to meeting you soon enough when you come out on vacation.
Oh, yes, that sounds like a very good idea. Why don't you give me a reason to come to Hawaii? Hire a voice coach, and I'll come and do the voice training on your courses.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
All right, lovely to talk to you. Have a great time.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thanks for listening to the Hawaii Hypnosis Podcast. Connect with us at Facebook.com/Hawaii Hypnosis, Twitter.com/Hawaii Hypnosis, and YouTube.com/Hawaii Hypnosis.